Welcome to Uncle Bob's Magic Cabinet, a mother-daughter podcast about all things magic and mythology and pop culture.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
And we're on.
And we're on.
Hey, everyone. I'm Liam, the daughter.
I'm Lori, I'm the mom.
Welcome to Witch Whispers.
Witch Whispers.
Hey, we have something fun today.
Oh my gosh, we have such a special treat.
We have a little special treat for you. Yes. For spooky season.
Ooh.
So, as you've probably heard us talk about, or as you've seen on our social media,
yes,
we're lucky enough to partner with In Search of Darkness.
I'm so stoked about
for
this.
For their new documentary all about 90s horror.
You had me at documentary.
You had me at 90s. I don't know why I laughed like that. It felt like I needed a cigar and a mustache. That was a mustache laugh.
I was thinking blankie and a bowl of popcorn.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So if you don't know, In Search of Darkness is an independent documentary series that kicked off with an extensive look at 80s horror.
Yes.
This was a few years ago.
Loved
me and Laura and Fact Check Jake gobbled it up.
Loved it.
Seriously, if you like details and you like documentaries, go and check that out.
Yes.
That one kicked so much ass that now they're going to look at the 90s, and they're starting with years 90 to 94.
Yes.
I'm so fucking excited because if you're new here, I love the 90s. I was born in 93. That's all I have to say about it. I love
and the rest is history.
I rest my case. I love the 90s.
Yeah.
I do think it's a really special time in film and pop culture in general,
yes,
but especially horror. And I feel like
it gets
left out of the conversation a lot.
Yeah. And just like looking back at all of the things that came out in the 90s, it's
You're like, oh my gosh. There were some really heavy hitters.
Yeah.
So In Search of Darkness Eyes.
No.
The community manager,
yes,
for In Search of Darkness,
yes,
Tori Potenza,
yes,
reached out to us and they were like, hey, can I come and talk about horror with you? And we were like, fuck
absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
So they are the community manager, like I said. So we've been talking with them this,
yes,
whole time. They're lovely. They also are a film writer.
Love
so
it.
So you can go and read, you know, she's got a lot of cool articles. And if you like horror, go read her stuff.
Yeah.
Super talented. So we sat down with Tori and we talked about 90s horror,
yes,
and their writing and a little Stephen King talk. So we hope you enjoy.
Yes.
Go check them out. Check out the 90s documentary. We'll have the links to everything.
Yes.
Enjoy.
Get yourself a copy.
Get yourself a copy. Yeah,
yeah.
There's a lot of cool add-ons Tori will mention in the,
yeah,
chat. So yeah, definitely go and check that out.
Yes.
And you know, line up a 90s movie marathon. We mentioned a lot of good movies in our talk,
yes,
with Tori. So there's definitely like a list you can gather.
Get your pen and paper.
So enjoy the chat, friends.
Yes. TTFN.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Very nice to like finally like see you face to face.
Yes, same. Yeah. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good.
We're doing good. You're busy. Where you're at? New York Con?
So I wish I could have gone to Con because there was some really cool horror stuff going on there too.
There was.
But I'm at Brooklyn Horror Fest actually. So last year I came for the first time. It was like my first in-person fest since COVID and it was amazing. And this year is even better. So
yeah,
nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
And thank you all for like, you know, helping support the project.
Sure.
And yeah, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're super excited.
Yeah, any chance to talk about the 90s, I will take it.
Yeah,
as soon as I saw 90s, I was like, yes, absolutely. I'm there.
Yeah. Are you like a 90s kid too?
I was born in 93. Yeah, I feel like we got all the good stuff in like the late 90s, early 2000s is especially my favorite. But this caused me to like look at the early 90s and I was like, wait a minute, there was a lot of
good
stuff.
Yeah.
Like a lot of our favorite favorites.
Yeah.
There's some gems, and there's like, I'm discovering so much still, which is just so much fun. Yeah.
I'm enjoying seeing everyone's posts because I'm like, ooh, another movie to add to the list. Yeah. Like, this is so exciting.
And I love some of those real deep dives, you know, the obscure stuff.
Those are my favorite.
Yeah.
Me too. And especially like, there's so much like direct to video or TV stuff. And like, once you get in there, you're like, there's just endless options.
Cheese-tastic. Right. Cheese-tastic. Yeah.
The cheese is high. Yes.
Well, do you want to tell everyone your name?
Yeah.
So I'm Tori Potenza. I'm here, like, at least for this, because I'm the community manager and associate producer on In Search of Darkness 90 to 94. So we're doing a two-part series, one on the early 90s and one on like the later half, which will be very robust too, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait.
On top of that, I'm a film critic, a video essayist, and I write a lot of weird stuff about horror. So
I love it. I've been deep diving. I'm like, oh, there's so much to see.
So you wear many hats, is what you're saying.
Yeah, which is like, I think, kind of good for me. I feel like it keeps things interesting if I'm working in like a lot of different areas.
We're the same way. Yeah.
I think it just goes with the creative mindset. You know, you always have to have your hand in something.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It makes so much sense.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell me about Creator VC. Like, what is there? I know they kind of do things in an interesting way that I think is an important way, like how they make their movies.
I mean, it's all like, you know, it's all like for the fans, which is something that I think is really amazing and important. I mean, I just came on for the 90s project, but they've did a three-part series on the 80s, which is incredible. They have In Search of Tomorrow, which is on 80s sci-fi. They just Aliens Expanded. So just like tons of great, like, deep dive documentaries. You know, people loved the 80s series, and it makes sense because it's so detailed. And
much. If you love details and you like to get into like the nitty gritty, which I'm speaking her language. Virgo. She's a Virgo. Yeah. What's your strong sign?
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm like right on the cusp of Libra Scorpio. My birthday is October 23rd. So,
I like that cusp.
Yeah, that's a good cusp.
That's a good cusp.
Yeah.
I'm an Aquarius. Yeah. I'm the weird one over here. It's fine.
Yeah. Do you know your big three? Bonus points for that.
Yes. So, luckily I did a birth chart a couple of years ago. Wow. Like Scorpio, Libra, because I was also born overseas. So that like messes with everything too. And then my moon is Sagittarius, and I'm a Virgo rising.
Oh, there you go.
I love the Sagittarius moon. Anyone who has a Sag placement in the big three, I'm instantly like, oh, let's be pals. Okay.
So that's a good place. They're just so fun loving, and they just want to know information, and they just enjoy talking to people. I love it.
Yeah, so it makes sense you're in this position then, right? And that you're a writer.
I think that's the thing too, is like, I feel like I'm more of like a jack of all trades. Like, I know a little bit about a lot of things, which I kind of like.
Say that all the time. I come from
a history background. And so I just love researching and deep diving on just like whatever weird topic I'm interested in.
You did say Virgo.
I was going to say, that's the Virgo in there.
You did. Yeah.
I also love to research. I find it very satisfying.
So that 80s documentary, when I saw it was like 4 hours long, I was like, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah, definitely for the movie nerds.
I love that I'm also learning so much about like my sign from you all. I'm like, this is some stuff I'm terrible at, like, remembering those details. Yeah. I'm like,
We're those people that will bring astrology up. It will get annoyed. We just have to do it. We just have to let it happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're like cool witchy ladies, that's just what happens.
Yeah. We just, you know, we can instantly learn from each other, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So the 90s documentary, is it going to be like, as you said, it's going to be as robust? Because the 80s one was like, was it like 4 hours long?
Well, I think so. It's three parts, and I think they're all around that runtime. There's a lot going on.
I remember being lost in it for like weeks.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah. It really was. So is the 90s going to be as, you know, as thick?
I think it's going to be pretty similar, but I think only a two-parter. But, you know, I think like 80s, it kind of makes sense because like 80s, there's just a lot of like, you know, this is like new and interesting and really setting like some standards. Yeah. And 90s is like a little bit more amorphous and there's like a lot more details. Like we've been talking about it as this like lost decade of horror. Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of like rebranding horror movies as thrillers. There's like, you know, like we said, made for TV stuff. Yes. There's like all of this, like growing up in the 90s, like as a kid, I never thought I liked horror, but because I'm like a Halloween birthday person, I liked creepy stuff.
Okay.
Which kind of just means I liked gateway horror was available.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the 90s, you had all of those horror TV shows too, because we just talked about Goosebumps this last week, and then you had Are You Afraid of the Dark and Twin Peaks and The X-Files came in. I mean, you really had a lot in that genre.
Yeah. And then
and that scared the crap out of me too. Like I would hear the Goosebumps theme or like the Are You Afraid of the Dark theme, and I'd like run out of the room.
Yeah. Dude, we were just talking about The Haunted Mask, and I'm like, I don't want to watch it. Like it still creeps me out. No, thank you. I'm good.
I would see the book covers for Goosebumps and be like, oh, that's too scary.
They're like stunning, but then you're like, oh wait, those are kind of creepy.
Yeah, they are stunning and captivating, but then they transport you to the series.
Right.
Which is like scary.
It's so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so fun, like rewatching them now as an adult, I'm like, oh, this is like so like cheesy and like perfectly 90s.
You can totally giggle at it, but it still does kind of get you a little bit, especially that doll one too. I mean, there's a lot of creepy ones.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. So and I don't know if you got into, there was like a more of a niche one. And whenever people talk about it, I'm like, yes, you got it. So Weird. It was a Disney show.
Oh my gosh. So weird. Yeah. We covered that on the podcast a few years ago because I was like, no one seems to know this show. And then I saw it was on some, you know, app and I just like binged it and I was like, oh my gosh, it was so good.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weren't they so like fun. Rock stars or something on tour? Yes.
Which
yes.
is kind of like the dream. I'm like, oh, you're just like touring with your cool like mom and like hunting? Investigating paranormal stuff. Right. I was like, that's, oh my gosh, is that a job I could get?
It's us, except we are not rock stars. We cannot sing.
I mean, I think y'all like have like this amazing background stuff. I'm like, I don't know, you kind of seem like rock stars. Yeah,
I know. Tom Savini is here, you know, always.
I mean, the patron saint.
Honestly, we do need like a prayer candle with his face on it. Oh my gosh, should I make one? No, okay.
You should. I think that would sell. I have like an Edgar Allan Poe one, and I just saw John Waters one the other day, and I was like, ooh,
you know what? Let's get it going.
Let's get it going. Yeah.
So, why do you think like all of these came to be in the 90s? Like, why do you think the 90s was so important in horror?
Pivotal. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because there is some stuff that I think you could argue is like, I don't know, like kind of old hat. Like, you have directors trying to like continue some of the things that are happening in the 80s, but you know, there's also just like a lot of like political and interesting like social history too. Like I might totally ruin her name, but I believe it's like Karina Longhorn. She does the like You Must Remember This podcast, and she's doing a deep dive into the erotic 90s right now. And what I love about that is how she talks sex politics and how that really translates to all of these like sexy erotic movies that you know, it seems like that's like, oh, that's like pretty progressive and cool, but actually a lot of it is like some conservative kind of backlash and even just this you know, new wave feminism stuff. And they were like, oh, these like modern like women, they're all femme fatales. So
There you go.
Yeah.
So then it just kind of slipped in.
Yeah. The and then there's, you know, you have stuff like Death by Temptation, which I think kind of it's not fully about it, but it does get into like the effects of Reaganomics and then Candyman and gentrification. Yeah. So it just like some really great like social issues that are coming out of the 90s.
I was going to say, horror has always been just like a great, and sci-fi. I do love sci-fi for the political commentary talks. And I guess you do. Candyman was, I love Candyman so much.
Good. Oh, that's such a great one.
What did you watch the reimagining? Is it considered a remake? That did you like it?
I did really like it. And I guess it's like kind of a sequel.
Okay. That's what I'm always wondering. I did like it. I'm such like a purist. When it comes, I am so hard to win over with a remake. I'm stuck in the 90s. I'm like,
take me back. Stuck in the 90s.
Take me back to the 90s.
And fair. There's so many remakes now.
Right. So many. I can't keep up.
And as you often point out, I must have been vacant. I think it's interesting now that you're a mom because you're like, so much of this just flies by. So when they were little in the 90s, I'm like, you were in the throes of new parenthood. That's right. Yeah. You know, so
she often doesn't remember 90s pop culture. I'll be like, you know, Britney Spears. And she's like, who's that? No, I'm like, what? It's like, where were you for all of the 90s?
There's like I thought my parents just weren't into a lot of that stuff. Like they let me watch like the creepy things, but like, you know, it was like a lot of like, you know, I remember my mom, like when watching Jurassic Park, she would like cover my eyes when like the guy gets eaten off the toilet. She was just like, nope, you can't watch that. But then getting older and talking to my mom, like, especially like once I really got into horror and I bring up like all of these movies I love, like David Cronenberg is one of my big ones. Yes. And she's like, oh yeah, your dad and I saw that at the drive-in. And she like will always mention stuff like that. So, I'm like, y'all were so cool. Why didn't you tell me this earlier?
They were just trying to hide it from you.
I know.
You told me I couldn't watch The Lost Boys. And I have like a very vivid memory of me sneaking down the steps, like peering over and just watching it. And that's like being in love. That's
her favorite movie of all time.
But you did try to shield me from it too. It didn't work.
It didn't work.
It didn't work.
It just made her want to watch it more.
And there's so many of them, because I think I missed out on a lot of those too, because I like wasn't watching a lot of horror. And so I kind of came to it late. But some of that for people growing up in the 90s, as we're doing like the fan like surveys and stuff, like was really foundational to like their taste. And you know, as we're emerging as like, you know, millennial like horror fans and stuff. And the 90s is definitely back. Anytime I go to Target, I'm seeing outfits that I wore in like grade schools.
Oh my gosh. Like, I'm seeing all of like the butterfly clips
the
and
Avril Lavigne look
patterns.
Is coming back.
It is, isn't it? You know what? It never left.
No.
It never left. Because we were just talking about Goosebumps, and I was talking about how, like, you know, they were always at the Scholastic book fairs and it got kids excited about reading. And I do think that that was part of my foundation of like, oh, I love spooky shit.
Spooky
and
things.
And then you just kind of start rolling in.
And then you just like hone in on what your style is.
So what's your
favorite? And there was great cartoons too. Like I didn't watch a lot of like Goosebumps was too scary for me and Are You Afraid of the Dark? But like I really loved like Courage the Cowardly Dog Monsters. And those have episodes that I still think are really effectively creepy.
Courage the Cowardly Dog is so underrated. Yeah. Like that has such a creep factor. It's so surreal.
Yes.
Talk about like kind of Cronenberg-esque. Like it was doing something very different. I think Courage the Cowardly Dog is scarier than Goosebumps.
Now I want to rewatch and be like, ooh, let's dive into all the weird stuff in this show.
Oh, I know. I am going to go on a binge.
Yeah. That's a good one.
So speaking of 90s, we're kind of going into like a Stephen King week on our podcast, just because we noticed, you know, obviously he has a lot of big movies that came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
We're talking It mainly and then Misery, which I am like I've never seen Misery. I'm about to watch it for the first time.
Yeah.
Is that wild?
Congrats. Thank you. It's a lot. It's weird too, because I learned a lot about like these movies from like the VH1 had like I Love the 80s and 90s.
Oh my gosh, I miss those so much. They were so great.
Yeah, and you learn so much. And so that was one of I remember Misery, I mostly knew just as those few clips that they show of the real foundational moments that you're like, oh, that's so disturbing.
Terrifying.
But it's weird and fun. It is terrifying and creepy, but there is just kind of a sick sense of humor to that movie that I really appreciate.
I was going to say Kathy Bates is just kind of, is she oddly silly? She's not trying to be, but I feel like she just,
it's just the way she carries herself for sure.
Yeah. She makes me laugh.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know the movie Angus. Did that come out in the 90s?
I think so.
It's James Vanderbeek is in it. It's a very obscure movie, but Kathy Bates was in it and she played the mom. And that, when I was little, that
was your favorite movie.
That's all I knew Kathy Bates as. I didn't know Kathy Bates was you know, I just knew her as the mom in this really obscure movie. So when I saw her in the clips of Misery, I was like, I don't want to see her being that. Like, she kind of creeped me out. I was like, no, she's going to ruin my, like, favorite character. So I just didn't watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's so good for playing, like, a lot of those different roles, too. Like, another 90s one that I recently discovered that I love is the Diabolique remake with Sharon Stone, Isabella Gianni. So it's just like... amazing group of women she's like the detective character in it and is really good at just being that like kind of like suspicious and like investigative kind of thing. And so I just like love how diverse she is. And
I was gonna say she really can, because then she can nail a comedy role, like a full-on comedy role too, but she can be so scary.
And I think we kind of covered this last week, but that's the scariest type of horror for me personally, are things that can happen in real life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and she kind of nails like that Misery, every day. That's a totally plausible, you know.
Yeah.
Concept.
Yeah, and it is.
Horrifying. I was like going through it in my head. I'm like,
super crazed fan. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why do you think Stephen King, like his villain specifically, I know in the documentary, it seems like villains are going to be a big topic. So why do you think his villains seem to like stand out so
iconic? Staying power.
It's interesting because like, I mean, I wish I knew off the top of my head how many books Stephen King has written. I'm sure it's an insane number that is even crazier than I probably am imagining.
I know, I didn't start my research yet. I'm about to start, but I imagine
it's a hell of a lot. They're always like thick as a encyclopedia.
Well, I was like, I'm going to try to read, you know, one of his books for our episode this week. And I look at them all, I'm like, who's got the time? I don't know, not me.
Cliff Notes.
Cliff Notes, right?
I have an old, like my mom gave me like her old like hardcover of The Stand. And I was like, I'll watch that. And it's like, and it's like a dictionary
size. It's massive.
I think we have an old copy of Christine.
Okay, that one like, seems a little thinner. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And you can like burn through them. Like my first Stephen King was Salem's Lot. And I remember Salem's like being so into it that I just like, I like immediately was like, I got to finish this whole thing.
And that one specifically is probably one of my favorites, but also the David Soul, you know, movie.
She loves
still
this.
Terrifies me. Still terrifies me.
I still need to see that. And I'm excited to finally watch
it. Oh my gosh.
Oh, I think you'll like it. Well, that's interesting you bring that up, because that was a mini series.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that leads me to it, because we are
television. So, right?
Yeah. Well, because I think Pennywise and like, you know, specifically Tim Curry's Pennywise and that mini series is one of the scariest things.
Yes.
And we asked our listeners what their favorite 90s horror movie was, and it won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if the mini series format made for kind of like a creepier. It was like so drawn out. There's something about the pace of that specific movie that just builds the suspense. And then same with Salem's Lot.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. Yeah.
And I think a lot of Stephen King projects kind of benefit from that too, because he does have like, I think he is so popular and so adaptable, because like even when his stories get really fantastical, because I think that's like an interesting combination too. Like Misery feels really realistic.
Yeah,
it,
right.
Not so much. But
you know what? They had
like
me
some,
until the end. No.
But there's some like really great, compelling like character drama and some stuff that just really speaks to some like really universal fears. In it too. Like, especially if you were a kid growing up in the 90s, like the idea of this creepy clown that is like stealing children, and it gets crazier from there, but like there was a serial killer that did that, so like this doesn't even have
it was playing off of a very real fear,
and around the same time, I think, you know, like around the same time period.
It was a really good time to, you know, amp up the clown creepiness, because it was already getting creepy.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's funny, like when you hear, I think you, like when you talk about like John Wayne Gacy and stuff, it's like, oh, well, like, you know, the clown like thing was a good way for him to like get access to chill. And I'm like, really? Because like I grew up where it was like, clowns are terrifying.
Because of this, which is so interesting to think about, because they weren't really seen as creepy before that.
No, because when I was a kid, clowns were embraced, you know. Children loved clowns. They meant fun. They meant party time. You had clowns at your children's party. You went to the circus and you saw the clowns and they brought the entertainment. See, they like brought the lightheartedness. And then I think this movie came in and was like terrifying. Right off of
John Wayne Gacy.
And what was terrifying is that, I mean, yes, throughout the movie you had him look a little horrific, but most of the time he looked just like an everyday clown.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Which and kind Tim of Curry sucked the children in.
So versatile and iconic. Yeah. Like we love his roles too. Really is just like I had put it on the other night when I came home from the fest and I was like, oh, maybe I'll just fall asleep to it. And I ended up watching the whole thing.
Right. Yeah,
and
get sucked in.
There were times like I wasn't even like looking at the screen, but just hearing him doing the voice, like really gets under your skin stays there.
It really does. And then you couple that with like his facial expressions too. It's just really terrifying.
Well, yeah. And then he brings in that bits of humor.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, I know this is going to be scary, but then you're kind of like, but maybe he's nice because he's being funny and he's like trying to be embracive of the kids. And then you're like, so maybe he's not so bad. And then, the teeth come out or whatever.
And at the start, you're like, I know it's Tim Curry under there and we love Tim Curry and he's, he can't scare me kind of. Right. And then you're like, you kind of start to forget that it's Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's the thing with horror too, is like a lot of really effective horror like weaponizes the things that make you feel like comfy and safe.
They're trying to make you feel like,
these are good.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think it really does embody that really well because it was coming, like you said, right off of the John Wayne Gacy. And so it was seeing that flip and they really just were like, we're going to make you even more scared of this thing that used to be soft and sweet and cute. Yeah. You know?
And again,
and like now they're forever terrifying. Like no clowns aren't coming back the other way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like when we go to haunted houses and stuff, I will avoid the clown themed one. Like I am just not into it. It really is probably one of my like tropes that gets under my skin.
My mom has one of those like animatronic, new Pennywise from the movies. Yeah. And she got it and was like, look at this like amazing Halloween decoration. And I was like, I hate that you have this in your house. Why
this is not coming comforting. Over to visit. Get it out.
This is not
like
comforting.
Not cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Well, and I think that's the other thing that really makes this terrifying is that if you go back and think of the technology at the time, it was a mini series. So it was two nights. Uh-huh. You had to be there. It wasn't like we could just pick it up and watch it anytime we wanted like we can now. Mm-hmm. You had to be in front of the television.
That does add to it. In the 90s.
You had to sit through the commercials. And so you were like on the edge of your seat. And then talk about a stellar cast on both sides.
I love the cast of it.
And amazing performances, like the drama with everyone is just like, there's like just a lot of really sad elements. And I think that's another element of Stephen King too, is that like the drama and the like real human emotion is usually there and it gets
plays
really
on your
dark.
Heart.
Yeah.
Right. And so that really is like with the, especially like when, I forget the character's name, but the one who does not come back, every time. Yeah. I'm like, this is still so hard to watch.
Absolutely crushed. Well, they get me right off
spaghetti.
The bat. With,
Eddie Spaghetti.
They get me. Oh, yeah. Rest in peace. Rest in peace, Ed. They get me right off the bat with Georgie. Like, that little kid.
Oh, my gosh. Adorable.
Instantly, I'm like, oh,
the
my
cutest
gosh.
Kid ever.
I know what's about to happen, but, like, it just still crushes me every time. You kind of are instantly, like, you buy into the characters.
Sure.
I guess partially because of how they were written, but then just the cast was just spot on.
Such a taboo thing. Too to just be like right off the bat like, oh, we're gonna kill some kids. You're like
again with the making you think that you're safe because you're like, no, they're not
and the
gonna...
little girl on the bicycle.
They kind of just went for it.
And her name was Lori, and I'm always like, oh my gosh, Lori-Ann, which is that's me.
That is you, know? You.
Yeah.
As a kid, were you? Yeah.
But I'm when you look goosebumps at, right now.
I know, right? Exactly. Ew.
But when you look at the adults, when you look at like Harry Anderson and John Ritter, who were comedic actors known for their comedy, and then you're bringing them into this serious dramatic horror role. And
you weren't expecting it,
but I totally bought it, you know?
Yeah. Like Seth Green.
Yes,
I feel like a lot of comedians and comedic actors just are great in horror. Like they know how to use them. Yeah. And I mean, like every time I see John Ritter too, I'm like, oh, because I remember him him being in Buffy. Like, he's in a really, like memorable episode of Buffy, too.
Yes. So he's and he was in that show when we were young. What was it? It was like a sitcom.
I mean, I know him from Three's Company, obviously. Okay. R.I.P. Suzanne Summers just passed away. So that's what I know him from.
Okay. He was in a different one that was like, I don't know.
He was filming when he passed away.
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember that. It was like, I don't know, like something about dating my daughter. I don't know. Like
something about that. Yeah. So I knew him from that. Yeah. I feel like everyone loved John Ritter.
Everybody loved John Ritter. Yeah. Harry Anderson, of course, passed away again. He was well loved. And Jonathan Brandis, you know, died at a very young age.
You know what? Watching Jonathan Brandis and it is very heartbreaking. Yeah.
Because what, I mean, when you look at these kids and their scope of acting at such a young age, the girl that plays the young girl,
Bev.
Yes. Yeah. She's in Supernatural.
I wish she really. Episodes.
I think she plays Becky. She's the one that is always in love with Sam.
Lore will tell you what actor was in.
It's a Virgo trait.
I can't remember anyone's names, but I know what I saw them in.
Exactly right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, what was it? Eddie Spaghetti. Like he's in The Thing too, which I always forget. And also kind of like a sad like figure in that. So I'm always oh, dude.
I know. Dang. Yeah. Why are you so
sad? I know. Okay.
The Thing still creeps me out too.
Oh, speaking of,
that is one that will always just scare the crap out of me.
John, that was one of the ones that got me into horror. Like I saw that and I was like, I didn't know that like horror could make me feel like this. Yes. But I like it.
It's a very visceral movie, but you don't want to look away. The effects in that movie are so wild.
Oh my
Like nothing I had ever seen before. And I was like, this is fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Cause on the podcast, we talk a lot about she's the sci-fi girl and sci-fi is not my thing, but two of my favorite horror movies are The Thing and They Live, and they're both John Carpenter.
Yep.
So,
and very sci-fi lore.
And very sci-fi.
I think you might like sci-fi.
Do you think?
There is such a good crossover. Like when you get into like sci-fi horror, like there's some great stuff that just like lives in that like middle ground. Even like newer stuff like Annihilation, I think is really great.
Oh my gosh.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, you as a Cronenberg fan, I haven't been able to, you haven't really come over to the Cronenberg side yet, have you?
He's a lot of body horror, right?
Lore's like,
it turns my stomach. It does flip flops.
It scares you.
Yeah, it really does.
It does what it is supposed to. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I tried away from him for a while. Cause I was like, oh, I'm getting into horror, but he seems like the one that's too much.
He's very horror.
It's like too goopy. Like I remember seeing like clips of The Fly and stuff and being like, why would I watch this? And The Fly is like one of the greatest
I do like that one.
And you do love The Fly because you love Jeff Goldblum.
Well, Jeff Goldblum is from Pittsburgh, so we got to love him. Pittsburgh native.
Are you in Philly?
And I've been to Pittsburgh once, loved it. Like, such a great city. I need to go back.
Hey, we lived in Philly for a bit. We love Philly. Are you from Philly?
I'm from Boston, but I've like lived in and around Philly for like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
I was going to do a Boston accent, but I will not.
Don't.
I will not.
It can't be worse than any of the accents from my actual family. So.
Boston. Okay. You know what? It wasn't that bad.
She just cannot help herself.
It's a running thing. I just like, and I really can't nail it, but I have the confidence to try at least.
I mean, I appreciate it. I tried really hard at a young age to like tamper that down, but it comes out like with random words sometimes too.
I love that. So are you a big reader?
Yeah, I do love reading. I feel like I've been a slow reader this year, but I think like I always thought more of myself of like as a book person.
Oh, really?
Until I got really into like movies a little later. But yeah, and like there's so much good. Like once I started getting into like horror fiction, there's so much good stuff. Even now, like some really like new writers that are doing some like some terrifying, really cool awesome stuff.
I know. I want to get back into, I dropped off reading for a while, but maybe the Stephen King thing will get me into it. So then as a reader, what Stephen King book would you recommend? Because just because we're going into Stephen King week here.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say The Shining, but I'm like, I haven't read that. That's a lie.
never mind.
But I mean, The Stand, I think, is so effective and good and interesting. And I also love that miniseries. That's like one of the ones.
I have yet to see that one. I'm excited.
I saw that when it first came out.
Yeah, I have yet to see that one. But a lot of people, I asked our listeners, and a lot of people said The Stand for book.
Yeah. And it's really good. And my mom was really into it. So that was a fun thing for us to like watch and like explore together. But then Salem's Lot, because that was like one of the first ones I really got into. And I think vampires maybe sometimes now get a rap for like not being like as creepy and scary, especially as we try to make them like sexy. Yeah. And
I was going to say Twilight really came in there.
Watch Salem's Lot.
I was going to say Salem's Lot. And the book seems pretty scary too.
Even Fright Night.
I think vampires can be so effectively creepy. I love the vampires are probably my favorite. And then
the mini series stuff is so good for King because like he is so like he has so many like side stories. You have like side quests like in his books a lot.
Yeah.
And you can't really explore that in just like a movie. I think like Dr. Sleep is like maybe one of the most successful examples, I think, of them doing Stephen King really well on screen.
I was going to say, I haven't read the book, but I saw the movie and oh my gosh, I loved it.
Yeah. Incredible. What about the Tommyknockers was a mini series, right?
Tommyknockers is not my favorite. I want to see that.
Yeah.
I will not lie.
Yeah. It was interesting.
The roast of Tommyknockers.
I just proceeded to roast it.
That's come up a lot. A lot of people are really excited to talk like Tommyknockers. Yeah, so I got to watch that one.
Yeah. You know, that's the one with the green.
Yes.
Yeah. I think you covered that for an episode. And I was like, what the hell is going on in that? Sometimes Stephen King just comes out of left field with shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We also watched, for the watch party, we did Sleepwalkers a couple weeks ago.
I covered that one.
That one is wild.
I mean, it's Leo, right?
It's Leo from Charmed.
That's the first, I was like, oh, I didn't know that he was in anything other than Charmed.
Wasn't he having sex with his mom cat or something? Wasn't it?
Yeah, that like was a fun, yes. Yes. But the fun fact was that the two were really having sex.
Whoa.
Yeah. And she was like, that was a fun fact when I covered it. I was like, what? Did I just read this correctly?
Yeah, she was mortified. Did
she? Wow. And she was like way older than him. Not that that matters, but it's like,
Laura, stop being jealous.
That just adds a whole nother level to just the creepy incestuous stuff that's going
that
on in
that one. Real interesting. Right.
Yeah.
And if I recall, the transformations of them into the cat
not
thing.
Great.
Were
the special
they cats?
Effects?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, cat
oh
people.
My gosh.
So what are like your favorite like 90s movies that you're really excited to like delve into?
Oh man.
I mean, I do love It. That probably is one of my favorites. And that's probably one every Halloween that I do reach for. Mm-hmm. But I like Dr. Giggles.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I want to see that.
Dr. Giggles is goofy. Yeah. Dr. Giggles is so goofy. Yeah. I'm big on horror comedy. So I would say stuff like Dr. Giggles. I love My Boyfriend's Back. That is one I feel like not enough people know. And it's just so goofy. And then you have like Philip Seymour Hoffman. Is in there young and it's got a good cast and it's just silly. But my favorite's like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie.
Yeah.
I am big on that.
I just watched that the other night.
Did you?
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's so fun.
It's so fun. Great. But now Luke Perry and Paul Rubens are gone. So now it's just gonna be a little
And Rutger Hauer.
And Rutger Hauer.
Oh my gosh,
The Hitcher still scares me to death.
I read a piece recently comparing The Hitcher and Christine, which was like one of my favorite things to write. They're two of my like absolute favorite like movies.
I love Christine. Love Christine.
Yeah, side note, my dad had a truck that ran for like 30 years
it
and he called it Christine. It never died.
It wouldn't die.
Oh, amazing. But it lasted. You guys are okay. So
we're good.
Like
yeah. But Rutger Hauer, that man is creepy. That man is creepy.
But also like kind of sexy creepy.
Sexy
creepy. Like beautiful blue eyes.
Oh, and that blonde hair.
In Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I did a podcast episode on him a while ago and found out that he was like the face of Guinness for a while. You can find these like insane Rutger Hauer Guinness commercials.
Really? Oh my gosh. We're going to have to find
them. We're doing that immediately after.
It's amazing.
No, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer at the end when they're battling and he's like flipping around. I'm like, okay, yes.
He's so fun.
He is so fun.
Yeah.
What's your favorite? Like if you had to save one 90s movie, like the rest were going to be wiped out and you could take one with you. What are you going to take?
Wow.
I know. Okay, you can take two.
So hard. Oh, I can pick two. Okay. That's still really hard.
But, I was going to say, I don't even know. I think I would take Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
I would take that.
That's fair. I think like, I mean, two of like my absolute favorites, because there's some like weirder ones that I've watched recently that I love, like Ravenous and Boxing Helena and stuff. Yeah. But like,
Boxing
I think
Helena some, I've seen.
Yeah.
So weird.
That's the stuff. But like, Twin Peaks
Firewalk with me, I think is just like so amazing. And I was like, I don't know why I need to watch this movie. Cause I was like, I know what happens to her. And then I was like,
right.
No, this is so important.
Like, I was going to say, David Lynch's mind, man.
Crazy.
Talk about, he's an Aquarius, right?
I think
what a place to live.
I was going to say, we lived in Seattle for a bit. Yes. So we move around a lot.
We move around.
But so we were near like Twin Peaks and Snoqualmie Falls and stuff. And
so that was my favorite place to go. We'd go to the Twin Peaks Diner. And
see the waterfall. Yeah. If you're a Twin Peaks fan, I would definitely recommend.
I want to go. It looks like just so picturesque and pretty too. Beautiful.
It's
like,
stunning. And you can definitely see why David Lynch like set chose that there that. Because it has a very specific creepy feel to it, like the wilderness and the tree. I don't know. It just seems very like you could get lost in a black hole or something there.
Yeah, I guess maybe the other one, I'm like stuck between Candyman and the Blair Witch Project because they're both so like foundational.
Yes.
Blair Witch vibes. Maybe because I like saw when I was like a little younger. And so it did. And I remember like my parents seeing it. Like I remember like having a babysitter.
It's a big deal.
Specifically went out to see that. Right. And for some reason, it also like kind of became something that was like a funny thing to make fun of when we were younger too.
Hilarious.
So like there was a Scooby-Doo.
I was going to say the Scooby-Doo when
it was the Velma's.
That is so funny.
And Blockbuster used to have these like thumb movies. I don't know if you remember those.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The War of the Thumb. Oh my gosh. Yes.
And they had the Blair Thumb and my family and I watched it and thought it was so funny.
That is so funny. Yeah. They were really ripping on that movie though, but it was scary. You know what? You know, they roasted it, but it was effectively like it was a terrifying movie, especially at the time. Like the marketing made you believe that those people were actually missing.
Was it like one of the first found footage? I mean, is that?
I think it was like it's kind of the found footage holy grail, right?
Yeah, it really like set the tone and then turned it into something that you know, like is now a subgenre, which is cool.
And like the whole thing where the actors didn't know what was going to happen, and it was very
survival-esque, just drop you down and
So here it felt like
here's a protein bar.
Yeah, those people were actually fucking shitting their pants. And so we all were as well.
But I think it's worth mentioning, like, because I'm like, I am now a lot into like international horror and trying to see a lot more of that. And there is some like great international horror in the 90s too. I think I think Criterion's been really good about like showcasing some of those, like Cure, which is a really weird one. There's like some great things, like especially like coming out of like Asia at the time.
Would love to dive into that. I just did, it's not from the 90s, but I just covered Wreck, talking about like found footage. That movie, I have not been scared by a movie. It kind of takes, you know, a lot to freak me out. That movie, because you're combining like, you know, the zombies and the virus with the found footage, and it made for I think like she hasn't watched it yet.
No, I don't want to spoil it. I haven't watched it yet. Speaking of found footage in the Blair Witch, I've told this story, but we went with a group of people I worked with and the theater was packed.
Yeah.
And so we had to sit in the very front row.
Ooh.
And the moving, oh my gosh, I was so nauseous. So that's a fear. And I'm like, I'm going to Ralph for sure. So that was just
it must have been such an experience to like see that on the big screen for the first time. I'm so sad that that's like a piece I missed out on.
The first time I saw Blair Witch, it was at like my cousin's birthday party. And I remember everyone was just like terrified. When that girl starts crying at the end with her boogers, I mean, it is funny, but it's also like, damn.
Terrifying.
It was terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And getting lost in the woods is something that could very easily happen. And
very easily happen.
Hold back the supernatural stuff for long enough where you're like, no, this is just playing on some like primal fears.
Exactly. Yes. And then that ending, simple, but holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Impactful.
The first time seeing that, you were like, oh my God, I'm not going to sleep.
Yeah. Fair.
Fair enough. I like that too. And then you can take Candyman on your island too.
Yeah.
I like
you
that.
Can have two.
Candyman is definitely Tony Todd. Ooh, I love Tony Todd.
Yeah.
If he's in a horror movie, instantly it's great.
In the trailer, one of my favorite parts from the new trailer we released, because it gives me goosebumps every time I hear him say it. But when he just says, "Be my victim," I'm like, oh.
Just that imagery of him with the bees, like on his face, and I'm like really afraid of bees. So then, it really worked for me.
And then them giving him the cameo in the Final Destinations was terrifying.
I know. And he does, he's the lead in the 90s Tom Savini.
I was going to say, Night of the Living Dead.
I think he's like one of my top, like, I really hope that we get him for the documentary.
Oh, that would be amazing.
He's so awesome.
I could just listen to him talk, I think, for hours.
Oh, yeah. In the interviews and the people that you talk to is just so informative, and it's just so nice to hear their takes and their experiences. You know, it gives you a whole nother spin on the movie, like watching it as, you know, a fan or a viewer, to hear their experiences and what, you know, encapsulated.
I just rewatched The Crow last night, and he is also in that, and I always forget about that because that kind of has like a low-key crazy cast, but I also, like, I got to see Candyman on the big screen a couple years ago. They played it. It was a double feature with Horror Noir, the history of like black horror documentary that they did. And it was like watching was the great. Documentary and then watching Candyman like right after with a group of people was just so effective.
Definitely
and
memorable. I was going to say.
Yeah, that documentary is great.
We're excited about the documentary. We really are. Thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, of course. I just had
the thought, I wonder if you're going to, Tom Savini. I wonder if they're going to talk to Tom Savini.
Wow.
I would love that.
And oh my God, like, that's my wish list. I'm putting
thinking
him on
about
mine.
Like his school and like, you know, like Pittsburgh and stuff like that too. Yeah. Like I have an 11-year-old sister who is getting into horror, but like actually pretty good at some makeup effects. So I feel like I'm doing like the like soccer mom thing of being like,
there's a school.
Tom Savini someday. Yes. And she's like, I don't know who that is.
Oh my gosh, let us tell you. We're right by the school here in Pittsburgh. Right by the school, and it's just so cool. And he's got his Colossum Studios. Yeah. He does stuff here. But I would love to hear him on the documentary.
Well, I'm going to have to come to Pittsburgh and find y'all and say hi.
We can hang out. There are some like horror bars and stuff we could go to.
I found a really good place that was like selling like really cheap like DVDs when I was there. And I was like, I just remember like having to pack like a stack full of them
Ides was the best.
I think so. Yeah. I was like, they had like You're Next for $3. I was like, of course I'm going to buy
they
that.
They have so many books, so many VHS tapes, at least they did the last time
posters,
I was there. We can go gallivanting around Pittsburgh and find all the spooky stuff.
And of course we have all of George Romero's filming locations here. And, you know, we've got the Night of the Living Dead Cemetery. There's so many things here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh
Romero too is just such an incredible filmmaker for like so many reasons, but especially when you talk about the blend of like social commentary
He I think was like one of the best at doing that.
I just covered the crazies.
Did you see the newer one that he did, the like it was like 45
the amusement
minutes
park?
They released it on Shudder.
Is it the amusement park?
The amusement park?
I haven't seen that one yet. You just could not sing the praises of that
I
one
couldn't.
Enough.
And we were lucky enough last week to get to interview George's wife, Sue's. And so once she was telling us that like a month before he passed away, a friend had brought that canister over and she's like, "What's this?" And he's like, "Oh, it's just something I shot as like a ad or, you know.
It's nothing.
And so then when he passed away and she started Garf, she was like, "Well, I want to restore this." And so that was their first restoration project. And I think it's phenomenal, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's phenomenal.
And another thing where like he like looks at so many different like people in society too. Mm-hmm. Like I watched, Hungry Wives. It has a couple different names.
Okay. You're talking about Season of the Witch?
Yeah,
one of my favorites. I love that one.
Like, oh, you kind of get the like feminist politics, yeah, like really right on some of this too. And yeah, so I'm always just like so impressed, like yeah, seeing how he's able to pull all of that off in so yeah, many different movies.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And then you have what he did with the malls and he's talking oh, yeah, about
Dawn
you
of
know,
the Dead.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. It's just yeah, he
consumerism
was
and
pretty genius at it. Where, you know, he kind of like it was obvious enough that you were getting the message, but you were also like
just enjoying a
just
horror
enjoying
movie.
Yeah, a horror movie if you wanted yeah, to. He yeah, really blended it beautifully, I yeah, think. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think like I know a lot of horror fans that don't even like talk about the social elements, but yes, like no, love but it like, so much right, for a whole other slew of yeah, reasons. Right. And it's cool right, to just see what sticks out to people because he's right, so iconic.
Exactly. Yes. And then hopefully it will be a gateway if you are just watching it for the horror. And yeah, then maybe you'll the planting second time seeds, around you'll be like, wait a minute.
Yeah. 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 Here in Philly, we have Exhumed Films. I don't know if you've like seen them or no, been to any of their stuff, but they no, they do a 24-hour horror movie marathon. And one time ooh, they did like college like films that like Romero oh, wow, and Carpenter and like some other people made. And I was oh, like, cool, it is so cool to wow, just see like the very clear images and yeah, being like where oh, they you're gonna go, you're yeah, gonna work through this in a couple ooh, years and do yeah, something similar and it's gonna ooh, be incredible. To
that. Oh, that would be cool.
That would be so cool. Yeah. Oh, I love
and
that.
And Garth is so cool too. I know they work with Salem Horror Fest, which I really yeah, need to get to. Yes. And Garth is yeah, I love what they
I
would, do.
I know. I want to go to that too.
To Salem Horror yeah, Fest. Yeah, we need to just get in a van and go to all of the like film fests, horror yeah, fests. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I need that to just like fun, be my full time job.
I was going
to
say, I was like, wait, that actually sounds really fun. Yeah, let's all do it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yep.
But yeah, Garf is amazing. They're doing their fundraising right yeah, now. We always end up oh, talking cool, about George Romero. Yeah, we were like making fun of ourselves the other day. We're like, we can't shut up about George Romero, but
hey,
it's in our much Pittsburgh, worse things you could talk about.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
All right. Well, where can people order the documentary?
Yeah, so you go to 90shorrordoc.com. Nice. You can order the documentary, pre-order the documentary yes, there, yeah, along with like some really amazing add-ons, like a we like re-released the 80s doc yes, because that's like really hard that, to get your hands on.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad was like, I got the like premium like package yeah, or whatever. Heck I was yeah, like, oh, yeah, thanks, Dad.
That's so cute.
But yeah, tons of cool add-ons and
there's a lot you know, of cool add-ons. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like the reason the documentary works is because there's such a great fan base that like gives right, us their like insight and opinions yeah, and like they're the ones that want this to happen. And right, that's why they're pre-ordering it. And so yeah, it's really exactly, cool just to see that like coming together and yeah, like building something with yeah, like such a diverse and huge community and like exactly, making it something that everyone kind of loves.
Like a yeah, shared passion. Yeah. I absolutely, know. Yeah. People really do seem to be getting excited. It's mm-hmm, cool to see. And like, this is yeah, like a fan, you know, the fans yeah, are so involved in the documentary. Yeah. It's really cool. Like you said, yeah, to yeah, just have great, that connection.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad we're talking about 90s horror in this capacity. And, yes, you know, I think like we're starting to have similar conversations about 2000s horror now, ooh, which is very,
oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Oh, involve yeah, me in that conversation too, because I could talk about Josh Hartnett's hair alone.
The faculty, it's like her favorite.
I did a whole episode on how it's magical because it was just mesmerizing. I mean,
he was one of like my favorite parts of Oppenheimer just because yes, I was like, he has not aged and his outfits are amazing and his hair is also amazing. That was
we kind of love Josh Hartnett.
We
yeah,
do.
Yeah, exactly. But only he could get away with that hair in the early 2000s. I mean, there is something yeah, to be said about it.
And then you get him in the 90s too with the faculty and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, you like, do. Yeah. 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 And when was H2O? Was that like on the, I don't know if that was late 90s or was right on the cusp there. I know LL Cool J was involved.
Yeah, now I can't remember because that's one of the few yeah, like Halloweens I haven't actually seen.
Oh my gosh, you've not seen H2O.
I like that one.
No, okay, I gotta remedy that.
People are gonna tell you that it's shit, but I am here to tell you that it's my favorite of the whole bunch.
Okay.
I think it's so good. I have to look up when it came out. 1998.
Oh, that makes me very excited.
98, H2O.
H2O came out in 98. Yeah. So it was okay, right on that edge there, yeah, which is my personal favorite.
There you go.
I mean, I think like some of those, like, you know, I know like the 80s started a lot of these franchises, but some mm-hmm, of the like 90s entries into them are the so best, interesting. And then you get incredible things like New Nightmare and you're like,
I was
oh,
gonna
yeah,
say,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there was like a specific cheese factor, like just like the 80s is specifically yeah, cheesy to the 80s. Yeah. The 90s, especially, they were trying to bring in some of those like effects. And then
yeah, I just watched The Haunting for the first time and I was like,
So wow. rough. So
the
rough.
One with Liam Neeson? Are you talking about the one with Liam Neeson?
Yeah.
It's trash.
Yeah, she always tells me it's trash. I liked it, though.
No, Laura. Who? What?
I mean, it had Owen Wilson in it.
That's
the only thing. Yeah, I know. Crazy cast. And actually, someone said yesterday it's like one of their favorite 90s ones. But also, I know a lot of people that were like, oh, I saw that in theaters. And so it was weirdly a foundational horror movie for a lot of people.
Interesting.
I
roasted any chance I get.
Mean, if you look at the novel by Shirley Jackson and then the original Haunting and then this remake and then you go to The Haunting of Hill House on that. I mean, all of them have their place, I think.
And that one's obviously at the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Shirley Jackson fan as a reader. So, I mean, that original Haunting, I think, is so great.
Like the original, love Hill House.
Yes.
Yeah. But I do also just love being, especially like the 90s remakes where I'm like, how are we going to like do this in the 90s? Like, especially Diabolique. Like that was one where I was like, it's such an effective noir. But then you're like, oh, but it also makes sense as a cheesy erotic thriller. Okay, that's why we're doing this.
I was going to say, it's just the time period brought its own, like, just its own cheese factor. Yeah.
It was magic.
It was magic. Like, take me back. I said it before, I'll say it again.
Magical stuff.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. All right, well, where could people find you?
I'm the Neon Banshee on most like social media platforms, and Tori Potenza. I'm a staff writer for Movie John, but you can find my work like in other areas too. You can pre-order the Nottingham Horror Collective. Does these incredible horror zines, and each of them is based around a different tarot card. So we just started pre-orders for the Judgment zine, and I have a feature in there on on like birthing justice in the Brood, Lady Snowblood, and Prevenge. So
our audience will like that.
That sounds awesome.
That's very
cool. And they're going to be one of our partners too. So when people get membership cards, you'll be able to get a little discount with Nottingham, along with some other really amazing vendors. So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Hey, I love it.
Wow. Busy.
Busy. And you said Movie John, right? Like Philly John. I love John.
Yeah. That's the first time I heard that is when we lived in Philly.
I know. She was very confused for a while.
That was a weird, I was like, can anyone explain John to me? And they're like, yeah, John Sir's John. And you're like, okay.
John is
and eventually
everything.
You get it.
John is life. John is things.
But we have a zine. We do a quarterly zine for Movie John also. So yeah, I'll message y'all. Maybe I can send you a couple zines.
We'll they're really cool. Oh, yeah, that would be so
be
cool.
Awesome.
Hey, we love talking to you. No, it was nice meeting you.
Thank you so much.
Have fun at the rest of the fest.
Oh, thank you. And I don't think I'll be able to come to the watch party, but like I'll watch it later. And please let me know your thoughts.
We'll chat about it.
Awesome. All right. See you later.
Right. See ya.
Bye.